Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? 'Cause Stone Cold said so.
Hey guys, what's going on, and welcome back to yet another edition of WWE Rivalries. It is Friday, October 23rd, and we just continue to blaze through the fall season here. A week away from Halloween, not sure if it's going to go on this year. I guess it's different per region depending where you guys are at with the COVID-19 pandemic and where your regional restrictions are at in terms of lockdowns and whatnot. But Halloween seems like kind of an afterthought this year, as we're all just trekking along, hoping to get to better times sooner rather than later. But we're also in Hell in a Cell season, which is 2 days away. I'm actually really looking forward to this pay-per-view, I gotta say, and I guess that's where we'll begin, as we will touch on some of the current product, like I usually like to do. And first and foremost, we'll start at the top. I love each of the main programs going on right now on Raw and SmackDown. Drew McIntyre versus Randy Orton is a big-time feud and a rivalry that maybe I'll be doing sometime in the future, because I really like what WWE has done with McIntyre and Randy Orton. You know, originally, I didn't particularly like that Randy Orton was getting pinned or gotten the best of. He lost several times to Drew McIntyre today, but honestly, I felt like they've protected him pretty well. Obviously, the last time in the ambulance match, Drew McIntyre was aided by three different guys in HBK, The Big Show, and Christian. So even though Orton lost, it really protected his character. And at the same time, you still had to make Drew McIntyre look strong. And I gotta give WWE credit that they have done a masterful job of building Drew McIntyre into a top babyface champion. And in the past, I've said that he's the best babyface champion they've had since AJ Styles, since his run in 2018. And honestly, I will say that he has been a better babyface champion than AJ Styles was back then. And to be honest, he's probably the best world champion as a babyface we've seen since Daniel Bryan back in 2014. And even that is tough to compare to, because Daniel Bryan had such a short-lived run as the world champion due to his injuries that we didn't even get a fair shake. So if you want to go back even farther, you're probably looking at John Cena or CM Punk when he was a babyface before he turned heel in the summer of 2012. So look, I really got to tip my hat to WWE, what they've done with this program as a whole with Randy Orton and Drew as building him as a babyface champion. I'm hoping that Randy Orton gets the championship here. I really think that he is due and he has earned another run as world champion. You know, the last time he held the WWE championship was back in the spring of 2017 when he beat Bray Wyatt at WrestleMania 33. And that was a short-lived run. He lost it, I believe, after a month and a half to Jinder Mahal, the worst WWE champion of all time, in my opinion. And I just really didn't think that he got a fair shake there. He was also booked as a babyface. So I really do believe that Randy Orton has earned, I think, at least one more run here. This is some of the best work Randy Orton has done in his career. And beyond that, at bare minimum, since his run with the Authority back in late 2013. So I really think they should put the belt on Randy Orton. But in saying that, I think that Drew McIntyre should recapture it in the near future. And here's why. I really want to see Drew McIntyre go into WrestleMania as the WWE champion. So just because I want Randy Orton to win it doesn't mean I don't like Drew as champion. I want Drew McIntyre to regain the championship, but that doesn't mean that Randy shouldn't get a run with it. Because by all accounts, it's going to be Randy Orton versus Edge one more time at WrestleMania 37. And as I said on my last show, I would love to see a Drew McIntyre versus AJ Styles main event for WrestleMania 37. Over on the SmackDown side of things, I think that Roman Reigns is quickly becoming the most hated heel in quite some time. And obviously, that's hard to judge because we don't have real fans in the building. But how they are booking Roman Reigns right now as a vicious heel, almost like he's in a trance that he has to be the leader of the family and he's doing this for the betterment of the family, I can't say enough good about how WWE is going about this program right now. I love it. I was kind of skeptical with them pushing Jey Uso at the beginning as a singles competitor, just because they had never done anything like that before. He was always glued to the hip of his brother. And I like the Usos, I always have, but beyond just a, you know, an elite tag team, I didn't really think they had much character depth. But I gotta say, Jey Uso has knocked this out of the park. The acting on both sides has really drawn me in. I look forward to watching SmackDown now. I've been saying for a while that I've preferred SmackDown, and I've continued with that. I like the SmackDown brand more with storylines and what have you. I think they got a couple of really good draft picks in last week in the draft. So beyond this storyline, I think there is a lot of potential here for SmackDown. I know Matt has mentioned it this. I've mentioned it before too. I'm really looking at Kevin Owens as a possible challenger, maybe a next man up to Roman Reigns whenever he is done with Jey Uso. So look, I'm really, really looking positively at SmackDown right now. And even beyond that, like Seth Rollins coming to SmackDown was a huge underrated move, because since their newest rendition of the brand split that happened in 2016, Rollins was one of the few big names that hadn't changed brands. He was the first overall pick by Stephanie McMahon back 4 summers ago, and he stayed on Monday Night Raw for the last 4 years, and I think that is very underrated and one of the best parts about the brand split, because him going to SmackDown felt like a big move. And that's not to say that the other moves didn't feel big, but let's be honest here. Kevin Owens has already been a part of SmackDown twice. You know, they had the New Day go back to Raw. Well, they started on Raw. They had Sheamus go back to Raw. Well, he started on Raw. They had AJ Styles go back to Raw. Well, he started the year on Raw, switched to SmackDown, now he's back on Raw. Even Randy Orton. Randy Orton was on SmackDown for, I want to say, 2 or 3 years since moving to Raw last year in October when they split it again with USA and Fox. But Seth Rollins has been one of the few guys that has never, ever been on SmackDown. So him switching to SmackDown was a big deal and kind of took me back to the old school drafts where you really wouldn't see a guy cross onto the other brand for years at a time. And the other great part about this is that he stepped toe-to-toe with Daniel Bryan, who is the other only guy. I want to say that these two are the only ones that hadn't jumped over to the other brand since the newest rendition of the brand split. Because when they did this, Daniel Bryan was the GM of SmackDown alongside Shane McMahon in 2016. And then since he's come back as an in-ring competitor since the beginning of 2018, he has stayed on SmackDown as well. So correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think that Daniel Bryan and Seth Rollins have ever crossed paths before. So seeing them cross paths on SmackDown was a big, big deal for me. Unfortunately, it was spoiled by the Mysterio family garbage as Rey Mysterio and the Power Ranger came out to ruin the day, just end a program that I was really anxious to see. And I'm hoping this doesn't mean that Daniel Bryan just goes back into darkness, I guess you want to say, or goes back home to spend with his family. And I understand that there's a lot of personal implications here, and I'm not going to judge Daniel Bryan for putting his family first, but I really hope that they come back and revisit a potential Daniel Bryan versus Seth Rollins feud. Because I got to say, I don't think I've ever seen them step toe-to-toe, besides maybe when Seth Rollins was in the Shield. But beyond that, I really don't think that these guys have had a meaningful program just because they have been on separate brands for the better part of 4 years. And I think that is the best part about a brand split. Because when you keep guys apart for so long and then you put them against each other, that's what fans want to see. It's not about switching a guy from Raw to SmackDown every year and saying, oh, well, now we have new matchups. Like, I think Kevin Owens and AJ Styles are starting to become maybe victims of that. You know, Kevin Owens has bounced around between the brands probably more than anybody, and AJ Styles more so this year. And I just kind of think it hurts the whole concept of it, and especially if you want to go down the road of brand loyalty. And we're going to see what happens when the calendar flips to November and we enter Survivor Series season, if they're going to go down that road again. But all in all, I'm really looking forward to Seth Rollins on SmackDown. It seems like he's going to have a program with Murphy, which I think is going to be very intriguing. Hopefully, we just fire the Mysterios into the sun. I have no time for Rey Mysterio or the Power Ranger. I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole again, but you guys know how I feel about the Mysterio family. But all in all, I gotta say, I really like the product by and large right now. Obviously, there's some things that are just completely idiotic, like a tag team championship match every single week, or Retribution we're supposedly meant to take seriously, but they got killed by The Fiend this week, and I don't know. I'm just, the whole Retribution thing, like the whole wrinkle with Mustafa Ali and him cutting good promos and being a really good in-ring competitor has kind of drawn me back in, but I feel like I'm going to get kind of bored of that really fast, just because beyond Mustafa Ali being a good promo and being good in the ring and overall being an intriguing character, there's not much there. And, you know, Matt has said his piece, which I'm completely in lockstep with. But Retribution just does not do a whole lot for me. But enough of the current product, and let's get to the reason why you guys are here. And that is for WWE rivalries. And I think I've kind of kept you guys in suspense to this point. I don't think I've revealed what I was going to do. But this is kind of a two-part rivalry, because there's two rivalries I wanted to do, but they kind of go hand in hand, and they happened one after another. So I'm going to do kind of a review of both of them, and that is Shawn Michaels versus Mr. McMahon / D-Generation X versus the McMahons. So this started at the beginning of 2006 when it was revealed that Bret Hart was going to be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame at WrestleMania 22. And this was a big deal because obviously you guys all know about the Montreal Screwjob, and at this point it had been just over 9 years since we had seen Bret Hart on WWE television. And there had been some ending of the fences, if you will, between Bret Hart and Mr. McMahon. Like, they had the Bret Hart DVD come out, so you know that they were starting to bridge the gap to a potential reunion of sorts. But when it was announced that he was getting inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame, you knew that both sides were ready to bury the hatchet. But in early January, Vince McMahon comes out in his over-the-top Mr. McMahon character and starts rehashing the Montreal Screwjob, which leads to Shawn Michaels coming out to confront him and maybe tell him that it's time to move on. And basically telling Vince McMahon that, you know, a lot of time has passed and we should just drop this whole thing. And you got to remember that Shawn Michaels had been a babyface by and large for the entirety of his return to WWE since 2002. So it wasn't really in his character's DNA to continue down a heelish program, which is essentially what he did in 1997 when he was the leader of D-Generation X. But now, as a babyface and one of the biggest babyfaces and most beloved guys on the roster by the fans, they really couldn't have Shawn Michaels come out and kind of rejoice with Mr. McMahon and be glad and reminisce about how they screwed over Bret Hart, who also was still beloved by the fan base over the fond memories that they had of him a decade ago. But this leads into Vince McMahon kind of making Shawn Michaels' life a living hell for the succeeding 2 or 3 months. You know, they had him get eliminated from the Royal Rumble in 2006, where Vince came out, distracted him, and Shane interrupted the match and threw Shawn Michaels over the top rope. They led to the Spirit Squad, who, I don't know if you guys remember them, but they kind of became the henchmen to Vince McMahon. If you guys don't remember the Spirit Squad, go back and watch them. They were basically a 5-man cheerleading group, one of which actually, who became Dolph Ziggler. But they were kind of entertaining at the beginning, quickly wore out their welcome. I don't think they were around for more than a year. One of them actually had a brief singles run as Kenny Dykstra, I believe his name was. And then ultimately one of them, who back then was billed booked as Nikki, went on to become Dolph Ziggler. And he has had, I believe, a pretty successful run with the company. So at least some good came out of the Spirit Squad. So with them as the henchmen to Vince and Shane McMahon, it really gave them the upper hand on just making Shawn Michaels a leading hell leading up to WrestleMania 22. And the WrestleMania 22 match was Vince versus Shawn in a no-holds-barred match. But leading up to that match, you had Vince make Shawn join the Vince My Ass, Kiss My Ass Club with the help of his son Shane. And it actually led to a street fight between Shane and Shawn Michaels at Saturday night's main event. And in this match, Shawn Michaels got put in the sharpshooter by Shane, and paying homage, I guess, to the Montreal Screwjob, Vince rang the bell early and gave his son Shane the victory. So they were really building off of this, off of the whole Montreal Screwjob that took place 9 years prior, and just use it to make Shawn Michaels' life a living hell. So leading into this match at WrestleMania 22 with Vince versus Shawn, they had built nuclear heat against Vince and Shane and the Spirit Squad. And you knew that there's going to be maybe some shenanigans going on, outside interference. Like, this was going to be a gimmick match for the ages. But I got to say, this is one of the more enjoyable Vince McMahon matches I have ever watched. And he took an absolute beating at the hands of Shawn Michaels. And I actually think that Shawn Michaels came out and said that he had to promise Vince that he would not take it easy on him in this match. And Vince really got his ass beat, I gotta say. The Spirit Squad ran in and got quickly cleared out of the ring by Shawn Michaels. Shane McMahon obviously got involved. He actually got handcuffed to the bottom of the ring post and had to watch his dad get his lights knocked out by Shawn. And this actually culminated in one of the more famous spots in WrestleMania history. So, essentially what happens is he beats Vince McMahon lifeless, puts him on a table inside a trash can, climbs the ladder, a 20-foot ladder, Shane McMahon hopelessly watching, handcuffed to the bottom row, gives the DX chop, and then jumps off the ladder, delivering the elbow drop to Vince McMahon through the table, and then he proceeds to stand Vince McMahon up, give him a vicious sweet chin music, and count the 1, 2, 3 for the victory. But more so than the win by Shawn Michaels, there was a more telling and important sign in this match, and that was the DX chop that we had not seen in 4 years, since 2002. We had not seen Shawn Michaels do anything D-Generation X related, or anybody in WWE do anything D-Generation X related. You got to remember that leading up to 2006, you know, Shawn Michaels versus Triple H was one of the most vicious and personal rivalries on Monday Night Raw. So having them reunite as D-Generation X was really an afterthought to this point. And I remember watching it. I actually saw this in the movie theater with my friend and my stepdad. And watching this and seeing him do that, I was really caught off guard. And as you heard, you know, Jim Ross was kind of selling the whole thing that, you know, not to become what Vince wants you to become, don't do this. So they really kind of laid an Easter egg to say that maybe Shawn Michaels' character was in for a bit of a change over the next couple of months. So following this match was the Triple H versus John Cena main event for the WWE Championship. And lo and behold, in that match, Triple H does the Degeneration Chop as well. Degeneration X Chop as well. So you kind of wondered if they were actually going to push on with this, or was this just kind of to tease the fans? But if you kept watching WWE for the months after this pay-per-view, you really kind of thought that, okay, it was just to tease the fans. Triple H had a rematch versus John Cena at Backlash. Shawn Michaels had the match of him and God versus the McMahons at Backlash. Like, they really didn't cross paths. And on a separate note, I don't know if you guys ever watched that Shawn Michaels and God match versus the McMahons, but that was one of the more offensive things that Vince McMahon has ever done. He starts McMahonism, and anyway, we won't get too much into that. But the point is that Shawn Michaels and Triple H really didn't cross paths, and after this, there was no real signs of D-Generation X ever really becoming a thing after they both did the DX chop at WrestleMania. At Backlash, Triple H was involved in a triple threat match with Cena and Edge for the WWE Championship, in which John Cena retained the title. And as I previously mentioned, Shawn Michaels was in a tag team match with God against the McMahons, one of which he ultimately lost. But following this program, or this match, I should say, the program between the McMahons and Shawn Michaels didn't exactly go to bed. A couple weeks later, he was on a 5-on-1 handicap match with the Spirit Squad, and then in the storyline, it injured his left knee. And somewhere along the way, they included Triple H into this storyline. I'm going to give you a quick synopsis here of what happened. So if it sounds like I'm reading off of something, it is exactly that. Triple H, who was included during the rivalry, was ordered by Vince McMahon to break Shawn Michaels' skull with his signature sledgehammer. Triple H failed to do what Mr. McMahon ordered, turned face, and attacked the Spirit Squad. Weeks followed in which Triple H was supposed to become a member of Mr. McMahon's Kiss My Ass Club. Triple H, however, backfired when trying to become a member when he gave a pedigree to McMahon and laid him and Shane out in the ring. So now with Shawn Michaels off of television, you basically have Triple H taking that spot as the babyface. But, you know, we had been accustomed to, at this point, 4 years of consistent top heel promos from Triple H. He had been the top heel in the company for this entire time. So even though he had attacked the McMahons and beat up the Spirit Squad and what have you, he hadn't exactly gained the trust of the fans as a true top babyface. But Shawn Michaels was off of television, so the focus was completely on Triple H here. The following week, Triple H is put in a 5-on-1 handicap match, similar to that of Shawn Michaels was a couple weeks prior, against the Spirit Squad. But this was more of a gauntlet match, as one Spirit Squad member would come out, then another one, and it eventually got to 4 of the 5 members of the Spirit Squad beating down the game in the ring. And Vince McMahon was on the stage watching this whole time, and obviously gloating in classic Vince McMahon fashion. But just when the 5th and final member of the Spirit Squad was supposed to come out and complete the beatdown of Triple H, a surprising return happened.
Exactly. Whoa. Not on the knee. Break his damn neck.
What? How hideous can a human being be to order someone to, 4 guys to break this Triple H's neck?
I'm not a ridiculous.
Hey, Mitch, come out here and enjoy this.
That is
Mitch. Wait, we got one more squad member, Mitch, coming out. I almost forgot. Coming out and enjoy this, baby.
That was Mitch. Mitch tripped and flew out there. Mitch drunk. Shawn Michaels is back! That's why Mitch flew out! HBK is here, King! Mitch was thrown out! I can't believe this! The Spirit Squad is about to break Triple H's neck! Sweet tin music on Mitch! to see Marcos Miller. Oh, sweet tune music. And look at this. It's going to be yes. Pedigree. My God, ladies and gentlemen. It appears that we have just seen the reuniting of DX.
So as you heard, Triple H is just about to get his neck broken by the Spirit Squad as per the order of Vince McMahon, and out comes Shawn Michaels to make the save. And watching that made me remember just how Shawn Michaels got his knee injured. It was, they put his knee in the chair, much like Sasha Banks had her neck done by Bayley, and they were going to do the same thing to Triple H, but to his neck. And then just as when Vince McMahon called for the last Spirit Squad member, Triple H, Shawn Michaels throws out Mitch, the final member of the Spirit Squad, gets super kicked on the stage, runs down, makes the save, and Vince McMahon getting a front row seat to the reuniting of D-Generation X. But when the feud first started, it was very much D-Generation X versus the Spirit Squad. They had a 5-on-2 handicap match at Vengeance 2006, which D-Generation X won. Then they had a 5-on-2 elimination match at Saturday Night's Main Event, which D-Generation X won. So eventually it moved on from the Spirit Squad and it became more about Vince and Shane McMahon versus D-Generation X. And I remember there was one night where they were supposed to be in a tag team street fight, but Triple H came out dressed as Vince McMahon. Shawn Michaels came out dressed as Shane, mocking the McMahons. And then the McMahons walk out with the Spirit Squad behind them. D-Generation X has, well, I would say, bathroom material dumped on them on the top of the stage. Just absolutely disgusting, but in classic D-Generation X fashion. And then, of course, there was the famous incident of when Vince McMahon was in the ring cutting a promo, and D-Generation X got their hands on a production truck and started editing his voice or drawing in kind of like a word blurb, like, I like, and then a chicken logo, and I'm sure you guys could fill in the blanks. And then when he was leaving the ring, they played the old music video of him singing Stand Back from, I think, the 1980s. And that became like a reoccurring thing that DX would always play that video of Vince McMahon in the 80s singing the song Stand Back with all the wrestlers in the background playing the instruments, which was pretty, pretty funny. It ultimately culminated in a tag team match at SummerSlam 2006 between Vince and Shane versus D-Generation X. And what happened at this match is before the match even got started, you had Vince McMahon throw out just a bunch of goons and henchmen to attack DX before them. Obviously, the Spirit Squad came to the ring. DX made short work of them. Then you had William Regal, Mr. Kennedy, Finlay come out. And then ultimately, it was the Big Show who walked out to the ring and made the difference and really decimated DX before the bell or before the match even got started. But in classic DX fashion, they overcame the early deficit to the McMahons and they ended up beating Vince and Shane at SummerSlam 2006. But the following night is where things took a turn for the worse for D-Generation X as the Big Show and the McMahons ambushed DX and left them bloodied and battered in the ring. And that's when this program, I think, really got to its best. Because at the beginning of the summer and right up until SummerSlam, it was a rivalry, but it wasn't really a rivalry because it was always just D-Generation X getting the best of Vince and Shane. Like, dropping the bathroom excrement on them or getting in the production truck, beating up the Spirit Squad and mocking them while they do it, playing videos of Vince and Shane McMahon, like mocking Vince and Shane McMahon, dressing up as them. And then even at the SummerSlam pay-per-view, yes, Vince and Shane had the upper hand for a bit due to the outside interference before the match even got underway. But once DX came to, it was a pretty much one-sided match. But following SummerSlam, when they got the beatdown, that's when you really saw, like, okay, it's the first time DX is legitimately losing this rivalry. And in my mind, it became a legitimate rivalry for the first time, because it was the first time you really saw a show close out with DX on their backs. And the McMahon saying there, side by side with the Big Show, announced that at Unforgiven, it'll be D-Generation X versus the McMahons and Big Show inside Hell in a Cell. And Big Show was getting a pretty big push at this time. He was the ECW champion. He was the face of that brand. But in classic WWE fashion, this is when they started not respecting the rules of the brand split. But I didn't mind it, because I really enjoyed this program, because how many times has Matt said it? The Hell in a Cell is supposed to be the blow off to a program. And in the spirit of Hell in a Cell, with it being just 2 days away, we see yet another example where a big program that had lasted, if you want to go back all the way to January, as it started with Shawn Michaels and Vince, and then eventually turned into DX versus the McMahons, was finally getting a blow off after a 9 month long build inside the cell. So this is what Vince McMahon announces following the massive beatdown that they laid to D-Generation X with the help of the Big Show. But it's the very next week on Raw where we see a different side of D-Generation X, because we were used to the happy-go-lucky, playing pranks and all that kind of stuff. But it had been quite some time since we saw a more intense side of the two, being Shawn Michaels and Triple H.
It's been a long time since someone has made us taste our own blood. So for that, Vince, we've just got two words for you. Thank you. Thank you for reminding us just who the hell we are.
Hello, here comes DX.
They are DX, and here they come.
Michaels and the game. They got stopped by security. They got to pay tolls. You're trying to reason with DX?
So DX returns after the week of getting their asses beat for all intents and purposes, with Shawn Michaels with a chair in hand, Triple H with a sledgehammer in hand. They tell Vince McMahon that they have been reminded who they are, and they come to the ring. But Vince McMahon had a security team surrounding the ring, which Triple H and Shawn Michaels cleared. Big Show and the McMahon scurried away, and I really felt like this set the tone for a legitimate, brutal match that was set to take place side in Hell in a Cell. And that was something important, because as I mentioned before, this program was hilarious and it was really entertaining, but it wasn't anything more than a comedy skit for a lot of it. And I think that taking this new angle towards it was very important, because while the comedy was fun and seeing D-Generation X again playing pranks on everyone was very, very funny, it was still cool to see Shawn Michaels and Triple H bring out that intensity. Because especially Triple H, he had always been such an intense guy, but it had been 4 years since we saw him bring that intensity as a babyface. We had always seen it as a heel. So to see him bring that same level of intensity, but now as a babyface alongside Shawn Michaels, was really cool to see. And I think it was a very important angle they took in this, because after a certain point, the comedy's fun, and it certainly is, especially when done by D-Generation X, and obviously the McMahons are great antagonists to do that, to tangle with, rather. But now that you had put the Big Show in the program and it was set to take place inside the cell, it was very important to really emphasize that this match was going to be a brutal experience for both sides. And brutal it was. It was one of the more intense and bloody Hell in a Cell matches I had ever seen, and I would truly recommend all of you guys to go watch it. I remember the match started with a double low blow to Big Show, which allowed for D-Generation X to lay a beating on the McMahons. Blood everywhere. I think all competitors were bleeding by the end. They put Shane McMahon's head inside the steel chair, which was elbow dropped by Shawn Michaels. He started coughing up blood. There were chairs, weapons, absolutely gory. But how the match ends is really one of the best parts of the whole entire match, because at this point, Big Show had been knocked out, incapacitated, but he was leaning over the top rope facing the cage. And at this point, like I just mentioned, Shane was incapacitated, and it was left with D-Generation X staring down a bloodied Vince McMahon. But we all know Vince McMahon's like for the Kiss My Ass Club, but I think this was an instance where Triple H and Shawn Michaels felt like it was a time to give the chairman a taste of his own medicine. So if you guys didn't grasp exactly what happened, and that was the end of the match in total on what ended one of the most brutal and bloody Hell in a Cell matches you will ever see. So essentially they pulled down the Big Show's tights and introduced Vince McMahon's face to his backside in one of the more disgusting images you'll ever see in WWE history. And then it was followed up by Vince McMahon eating a Sweet Chin Music. And then while he is trying to recover on his knees, kind of just standing there upright on his knees, all groggy, Triple H broke a sledgehammer over the back of his neck slash head slash shoulder area. And it's one of those spots that I never really understood how they did it safely, because obviously it was a breakaway sledgehammer. There must have been a crack in the actual arm of the hammer, but the fact that they were able to do it and do it so safely, I don't believe Vince McMahon actually got hurt when it was executed, was one of the more iconic, at least for me, like speaking from a personal standpoint, it was one of the most impactful visuals I had ever seen inside a WWE ring, because it was just an absolute brutal spot for the eye to see. And you even heard the reaction of the crowd just almost went dead silent afterwards. And then it was just Jim Ross, who obviously playing the babyface commentator, just said like, enough is enough, just cover the man, because even he could not deny how brutal that execution was on the sledgehammer hit to the back of Vince McMahon. And this victory for D-Generation X pretty much closed the book on this program as a whole between what started as Vince versus Shawn Michaels and culminated with the McMahons versus D-Generation X. And we didn't see the McMahons on television for quite some time following this, and D-Generation X went on to their next feud against Rated RKO with Randy Orton and Edge. But this was an important one for a lot of ways because, number one, we got to see the original D-Generation X back together for the first time in 9 years. And I know they had briefly come back together in 2002 before Triple H turned on Shawn Michaels. And we had the new D-Generation X with X-Pac and the New Age Outlaws. But it was cool to see the two original members in Shawn Michaels and Triple H back together for the first time in just under a decade. And second of all, I really thought it was time for us to see a run as Triple H as a babyface, because he had a kind of a reign of terror there on Raw for the better part of 3 years when he was the head of Evolution and even following the breakup of Evolution. And I don't hold that against Triple H. He carried the company, or the Raw brand more specifically, on his back through most of the Attitude Era. Aside from Shawn Michaels, there wasn't a legit main event guy other than Triple H on Raw for almost 3 years until Batista got to that level, and then they later on drafted John Cena over to Monday Night Raw. So I know people like to kind of crap all over Triple H for the constant world title reigns he had during this time, but if you really look deep into what WWE had to work with following the retirement of Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Rock leaving for Hollywood, it really kind of got left at the foot of Triple H on Raw. And over on SmackDown, you kind of had a do-it-by-committee type of approach with The Undertaker and Brock Lesnar before he left, Kurt Angle as well. So it would, but nevertheless, it was still good to see a fresh version of Triple H, because the top heel Angle had kind of run its course with the fans. And I think it was just time to try Triple H as a babyface, as we had not seen him in that role in close to 4 years. And then it kind of catapulted them on to have a very high profile feud with Rated RKO. And that was a very underrated one. And maybe I'll do that rivalry in the near future, because that as well really kind of catapulted Edge into main event status if he wasn't already there by this point. And that was four legitimate single stars going head to head in a tag team feud. But look, guys, I hope you enjoyed this week of rivalries. I know I kind of stayed on the trend I've been on of multi-person rivalries, but I'm just kind of do them as they come to mind. And this was one that I really thought was important to do, especially the fact that it culminated inside Hell in a Cell, and the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view is right around the corner. So anyway, guys, that's about all I have for you this week, and I will talk to you next Friday.